So I will talk about how imaging can facilitate VT ablation in structural heart disease. Oh, first, this is a picture of the beautiful Bordeaux. These are my disclosures. So the rationale to use imaging is that in this structural heart disease is that we know how reentrant VT works with respect to scars. It requires surviving fibers to be present within the scar, and these zigzagging slow conducting circuits are necessary to observe reentry. And we know for now 2 decades or 3 decades that late gadolinium enhanced MRI particularly is able to image a focal scar within the ventricle with unparalleled contrast and spatial resolution. So this information can be interesting in the context of VT ablation, both before and during the procedure. So this will be the plan I will follow. Before the procedure, it's important to understand that imaging is critical to identify the underlying etiology. And one very important message that I need to pass here is that a normal echo and a normal angio do not rule out structural heart disease at all. In consecutive patients with sustained VT or VF, we found that in about 40% of patients with no prior history of structural heart disease and a negative angio and a negative echo, we found things on MRI. So what did we find? If you compare the pre-CMR diagnosis and the post-CMR diagnosis, it's mostly patients who were considered as having structurally healthy hearts that turned out to have mostly non-ischemic scars. We can't make a definite diagnosis on that. There's many different small scars, obviously, because it's not impacting function on echo. But still, these scars were responsible for the arrhythmias because they were matching the VT morphology. And interestingly, imaging is developing. In EP, you have catheters that are of increasing or mapping techniques that are increasing spatial resolution. It's the same with imaging. The conventional way to do late gadolinium enhanced imaging is a breath hold technique, and during 15 seconds you cover the entire heart, and this is extremely good, but the pixels are quite large. The thickness of these slices are about 8 millimeters. But if you acquire data during free breathing, and these are recent or 5 to 10 years old sequences that are now available on most MRI platforms, you can decrease the size of the pixel down to 1 millimeter, and then you find more things. It's critical in this diagnosis of the structural substrate of ventricular arrhythmias. In our experience, the addition of this high-resolution imaging leads to a much better detection of structural heart disease in patients that are supposedly having a normal heart. So what we find is very small scars, sometimes subcardially located, sometimes mid-wall, sometimes subendocardial, so probably distal ischemic events on the microcirculation, maybe. We don't have a definite diagnosis on the disease, but clearly this has an implication both for prognosis, this is a scar-related VT, and for patient management also. Before the procedure, there are other information that may be available on imaging. First, if you can use the distribution of the scars that you see through the wall to decide the optimal access route. It's often quite straightforward for ischemic patients, but in non-ischemic scars, it can be helpful to visualize that this scar is probably just in front of a CS branch, for instance, so you could potentially access that via CS. Or when you find these mid-wall septal scars, it's a very important information to pass to the electrophysiologist, because obviously this procedure will be very complicated. When an epicardial access is planned, it's also interesting to, for certain cases, complicated cases, such as patients with scoliosis or things like that, to visualize the route, the access route, and in order to avoid complications. And last but not least, obviously, these procedures require the ruling out of thrombus before ablation, and this is an indication to perform either CT or MRI. But the most important impact of imaging on VT ablation is the direct use of this information during the procedure. And to do so, you need a step which is called segmentation to translate these pixels into meshes, maps that you can register with your electroanatomical mapping during the procedure. So there are many ways to segment these imaging data. There's a wide literature on segmenting scars on MRI. Substrate mapping from MRI is based on late gadolinium enhancement. So at the late phase, the gadolinium accumulates in areas where the interstitium is expanded because there are scars. And if you're doing that on quite high resolution images, you can come out with a mapping that is of unparalleled spatial resolution as compared to what you can obtain with catheters. It's a 3D mapping, so you have pixels every millimeter, both on the surface direction and through the wall. So this is really an information that is complementary to what catheters can bring. And this can replace a large part of the diagnostic phase of these very long procedures, which is the substrate mapping. But unfortunately, most of these patients have ICDs. About 80-85% of patients that are referred for VT ablation on structural heart disease have ICDs, and image quality is not always very nice on MRI in these patients. But there are means to do that on CT. On CT, on another classic arterial and on CT, you can visualize scar as wall thinning, intramyocardial fat within the infarct, calcification within the wall, and most importantly, in recent scanners, we can also perform late iodine enhancement to visualize scar as it is done on MRI through the visualization of the contrast at the late phase, the accumulation of iodine within scars at the late phase. So this is performed about 8 minutes after the injection of a sufficient amount of contrast. And you can see here an ischemic case, a recent infarct with no reflow. Here a chronic inferior infarct. Here mid-wall septal scars. Here subepicardial scars. And this is really helpful in these patients who have ICDs. If you compare that to MRI, there's another very interesting aspect of CT is that this late enhanced CT data can be combined with the anatomy derived from the arterial CT to have both very high resolution anatomy and high resolution scar distribution. I mean, if you compare that to what MRI can bring in the very same patient, it's very, very, very similar. So here is a typical example of substrate mapping before entering the lab, what you can obtain in a post-MIVT, maps of thickness, maps of fat distribution, maps of late iodine or late GAD if you've done MRI. And interestingly, this can be integrated, obviously, during the procedure so that the operator can visualize his catheter in real time within the model. And it can help both improving the efficacy of these procedures, going quickly on the appropriate targets, probably shortening a lot these procedures by performing part of the diagnostic mapping non-invasively before the procedure. And we believe that this image integration technique is probably a way to make it more simple and more standardized and accessible beyond ultra expert centers. Here's an example of a subepicardial scar that you can see here on MRI. Here is the scar derived from imaging integrated in the mapping system. And if you compare that to bipolar voltage epicardially, you see that there is very few low voltage. I mean, this scar is non-transmural, obviously, and the far field coming from the normal myocardium underneath makes the voltage normal. So obviously, the electrograms are abnormal, and all these blue tags are abnormal electrograms that were ablated in sinus rhythm. But the ability to have this full description of the scar to make sure that no substrate is left unexplored is important. And the second impact of imaging in this case is that when going epicardially, and particularly on the lateral wall, the ability to see the coronary arteries and the left phrenic nerve is very helpful not to perform useless coronary angios. We are still performing angios when the catheter is too close from an artery, but when you're far from it, you can spare some angios and not shoot the coronaries every minute before each RF delivery. So this has been a Bordeaux project for a long time, but we are now sharing the technology with about 30, 35 centers across the world, including some in Germany. So the idea is the images are sent anonymized through the cloud, and then we send back a 3D model with the scars. So far, we've done 1,200 patients in the consortium with very good outcome at 1 year, and by doing so, we're collecting a very large database of hearts that are segmented by experts on which we are doing AI to automate it and to make it ultimately available more easily everywhere. We have started to evaluate the impact on outcome. It's not randomized controlled trials, obviously, but it's historical series showing a marked improvement of post-ablation outcome in ischemic patients. This is a meta-analysis done by Dr. Hendricks from the Netherlands, comparing conventional ablation with image-guided ablation. Unfortunately, you don't see the numbers here, but she found both an improvement of VT-free survival and overall survival, which was quite intriguing. But the current strategy, what we are doing now, do you have still a bit of time?
Yeah.
The strategy is we're using imaging to have details on anatomy and an enhanced substrate definition, but the targets are still defined by EP, by catheter measurements, either activation mapping during VT, pace mapping, or substrate mapping and abnormal electrograms during sinus. Still, it has an impact on procedure time and efficacy, but soon we believe that imaging could really make an even larger difference by directly defining ablation targets in order to dedicate the entire procedure to ablation. These are very long procedures where ablation is just a minimum part of the procedure, and we believe that many of these diagnostic phases can be done before the procedure. So how can we do that? We don't believe that CMR could play a big role here just because the ICD artifacts are a big issue, that the high resolution late GAD methods that I showed earlier are not widely available, and that even when you perform these, CMR still has a limited spatial resolution, particularly in chronic scars, chronic post-MI patients, where the wall can be as thin as 1 millimeter. And the pixels on MRI, even with the nicest sequence, don't go below 1 millimeter. So you will have partial volume effect. It will describe gray zone because it will average the signal in the wall and in the blood or outside the wall. While on CT, you have much smaller pixels. It's below 500 micron. You can put a lot of pixels in these very thin walls. And our hypothesis is that mapping the thickness in these infarcts can help predict critical VT isthmuses because very thin areas will act as conduction blocks. It's an indication of scar density. So when you map thickness in chronic scars, in chronic infarcts, you will find, obviously, large thinning. You can see that on an image. But when you map it in 3D, you will have some corridors of relatively preserved thickness that will cross the scar. And in our experience, this is where the reentrant VT that we were able to map occur. So we've designed tools to automatically identify these channels, and these correlate. We now have an experience in many VTs that we mapped at high density, more than 30. And in these patients, it matches these channels. Here is another channel. So all you see in red is below 2 millimeters. So it's very thin wall. And there's a channel of a relatively preserved thickness between the mitral annulus and this scar. This patient was mapped epicardially at high density, and you see that, again, the critical isthmus was nicely predicted. Another way to use these models is to simulate an activation based on what you see on imaging. We've learned the relationship between conduction wavefront propagation speed and thickness, and if you pace within this channel, you will have activations with very simple models. It's not rocket science, huh? But these activations can help you simulating a 12 lead and then performing really a non-invasive assessment of the substrate, including EP dynamics. Another way to have an insight on how these infarcts are, or these scars are activated, is to directly record it, not simulate it, but record it with ECGI. We have a program on that, combining ECGI with structural imaging. Here is a case where we found two scars, probably of non-ischemic origin. The patient had normal coronary arteries in the lateral wall on CT, that were mapped as wall thinning here with an isthmus in between. And this patient was mapped with ECGI showing, obviously you don't see a lot within the isthmus, but you understand that this is a figure of eight of activation, and you understand before entering the lab where to go and what will be the challenge with this marginal branch here, because we were going epicardially. And this is what was found the day after. This is an epicardial isochronal map showing the exact same mechanism. So we're soon able to define the targets non-invasively. Now, why would we go in the lab if we can ablate non-invasively? So this is a long shot. You probably read these papers. There are several of these. This is the one from Kukulich in the New England on a very small series of patients, very diseased patients that were that were not candidate for ablation because their condition was too fragile. What they did is they defined the targets with MRI and ECGI. You could imagine that MRI only would also work, and they used radiation therapy to treat these patients with very, very nice results on the arrhythmia in this very limited patient set. But what we don't know is what are the risks for that, but it may be a solution for all these very large infarcts where ablating with one single catheter may not be the appropriate strategy. And if the patient is 75, 80 years old, performing radiation therapy is probably or maybe become a good option. So to conclude, the role of imaging in VT is both helpful before ablation to diagnose the accurate etiology, to plan the ablation by detecting thrombus, assessing for the need and challenges of epicardial access. During the procedure, it can provide an enhanced definition of the substrate and the anatomy, identify structures at risk, such as coronaries or phrenic, and very soon to direct define ablation targets. And the perspective is to make it fully non-invasive. So I will end up by three take-home messages on imaging and ventricular arrhythmias. The first is, if you have a patient with a ventricular arrhythmia that is not typically benign and without known structural heart disease, get an MRI even if echo and angio are negative. I hope the message is passed. If you have a patient considered for ICD implantation for primary prevention, you can measure LVEF on echo, but why not measuring it on MRI? First, because it's the gold standard, and second, because you'll have scar data in case of future shocks. And even if the patient comes back 2 years after, it's interesting to have this pre-implant MRI to work with. And then if you have a patient that is considered for VT ablation, develop a close collaboration with your imaging team in order to timely obtain these imaging studies. This is critical. And then seek for image processing solutions in order to get this information in the lab, not in the form of a report, but in the form of maps. There are solutions out there on the market. I thank you for your attention.
Hubert, thank you very much for this excellent presentation. Are there questions from your side? While you think of the questions, I got a couple. Do you think that the CT can help us to risk stratify patients? I mean, you're talking about simulating VT channels, simulating VTs. Do you think it may be a tool like in the MRI model from Natalia Trajanova that you can risk stratify a patient based on the CT?
What I can tell you is that we've done a retrospective. It's complicated to do prospective studies like that because these CTs are not really indicated. But a retrospective study where patients who were implanted for primary prevention more than 5 years ago came back and had a CT, and the surface of these channels related to the occurrence of shocks during the 5 years. Now, I'm not sure this is the optimal. This is something that's substantiating our ablation approach, but I'm not sure using CT to do a screening to stratify risk in a population, I'm not sure it's the way to go because it gives X-rays and it's complicated to implement a screening strategy based on a method that gives X-rays. And secondly, if the patient has no ICDs, and by definition, if you're considering him for primary prevention implantation, he doesn't have an ICD, MRI is really helpful because the contrast you have in the wall is probably richer in information than what you can get with CT. I would rather go for MRI.
You would rather go for MRI. Yeah. But what would be the specifications of the MRI? I mean, we're lacking spatial resolution, actually.
Not sure. It depends on what you're trying to do. If you're saying that you need a computational model to simulate an activation and to understand whether a virtual heart will develop VT, this is probably not the way to go to do risk stratification. This is probably the way to go to do a stress test on a substrate in a patient that does VT to understand where is the vulnerable area in this substrate. But to stratify a risk, what we need is to have simple markers of scar size and heterogeneity in ischemics and hypertrophic, in which everyone agrees, and that works equally whether you have a GE system, a Siemens system, you know. And this is a problem of standardization. And what we have right now is LVEF. This is a Stone Age, you know. And any improvement would make a large difference. So we just need to have standards. How do we quantify a scar? And I think we will soon get there before going into these simulations.
Okay.
Very excellent presentation. You mentioned the usefulness of the modalities for structural heart disease. What has to be improved in your mind also to employ CRI and CT scans for patients with non-ischemic cardiomyopathy?
To guide VT ablation or for risk stratification?
Both.
What we know from non-ischemic, excluding hypertrophic. Hypertrophic is a specific, but for DCMs, what we know is that depending on the series, half of them have LGE and half don't. And what we know from the literature, a very large meta-analysis of thousands of patients, is that even if you have 30% ejection fraction, if you don't have any scar on LGE, you have an annual event rate of 2%, and maybe you shouldn't be implanted. So this is, with respect to risk stratification, I guess MRI will rather take out patients from ICD therapy as opposed to ischemics, where it will rather make us implant patients with relatively preserved ejection fraction. With respect to catheter ablation guidance, I guess the combination of T1 mapping to assess diffuse fibrosis and LGE to assess focal scars and to understand why these scars suddenly happen to become arrhythmogenic is the way to go. So we have the tools. The only issue is spatial resolution, reproducibility across vendors. We quantify a lot of things, but can we do that everywhere in the same way? And no technique can enter the guidelines if it's not performed the same way everywhere. At least LVEF is something that is quite reproducible.
Thank you, I agree.
So as a conclusion, we should at least do an MRI before any ICD implantation.
Yeah.
Does anybody agree on that? Would be great. Okay.
No, but it's even...
I think we should do
an MRI in every patient that is diagnosed as having a structural heart disease. Mm-hmm. It's very important. Obviously, we need MRIs for that, and people train for that, but it's very important because it has prognostic information, but also diagnostic information, and we can also guide therapy on these.
I completely agree. The only problem is if we talk to our radiologist and everybody would get an MRI, they would go crazy.
look at neuroimaging. Stroke... The brain MRI in a patient with stroke is like a chest X-ray. There's no patient with a stroke that doesn't have his brain MRI. Everyone has it.
I agree. Huh?
It's just that they started earlier. They did their revolution in the early 90s, while cardiac imaging is rather two decades ago, early 2000s. So yeah, we need to get there. It's important.
I couldn't agree more. It's just getting this into realization is really
tough. Yeah, it's long.
It's a fight. That's the reason why the cardiologist has to have his own MRI. I think that's the prime issue. You have to work on that.
Okay. We will. Thanks, Hubert.